to fold. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champions. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again. The edge is ready to celebrate. So are these fans. Here comes a 1-2 pitch. Red Sox win the World Series! 5-1 the final tonight!
You're listening to the Pesky Report, a podcast dedicated to the Boston Red Sox by Red Sox fans.
Report is happy to announce that we will be sponsored by High and Happy Catering out of Springfield, Massachusetts. High and Happy Catering creates gourmet meals for small or large events with a twist. All of their meals are cannabis infused. If you are looking to have a real happy meal, call them at 413-785-8999 or search for them on Instagram at High and Happy Catering. You'll be happy you did.
What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Pesky Report. Ooh, who's got the I got sound coming back from an echo going on. Is that you, Ed, or is that you, Isaac?
I don't think it's on my end.
Nope. It isn't. All right, let's try it again. It's on your end, Isaac. It was on your end, Isaac. All right, let's try it again. Welcome to the Pesky Report. My name is Brad Chandler. This is episode number 56. With me today, I have two co-hosts. I have Isaac and Ed. How are we doing, gentlemen?
Well, I'm good.
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but there's an echo coming off from your side.
What the hell's going on?
Having some technical difficulties here. Sorry, everybody. Go ahead and take your time, Isaac, and figure that out. I'm going to throw you on mute for a second, okay?
Okay.
Yep. I guess he just wanted to leave. Or what? Whatever. It's you and me, Ed, for now, and Isaac will probably find his way back. So we've had a lot of shit going on. Obviously,
oh, yeah.
We had some technical difficulties starting this episode, which is pretty, you know, like, why not? You know, the Red Sox have been having a pretty shitty week, and why not start the show off with some technical difficulties?
It's a metaphor.
Knows. Yeah, basically, right? We've had... The Red Sox had a COVID outbreak, and it's literally like everybody was like, oh, it's the end of the season. It's the end of the season. You know, it sucks. And what's even worse is like, okay, you got Kike Hernandez. Like, we're firing right away. We're going to start this episode firing like balls blazing. We've got Kike Hernandez, who tested positive on Friday in Cleveland. Close contact was Christian Arroyo. Then comes to find out that Christian Arroyo ended up testing positive for COVID as well. So now he's definitely, you know, those two are out for, I believe the protocol is 10 days.
Yeah.
So here's Isaac. And we're still,
am I good now?
And we're still echoing.
I don't know what's going on.
I have no idea.
No idea either.
Are you going through your speakers?
Are you going through your speakers?
But it's not.
No. Is it better now?
No.
Is that better?
I can't hear myself talking.
Is that better?
I can't hear myself talking this time. Nope. I can hear a slight echo, but it's not as bad.
Is this better?
The only way I can tell is if I'm talking.
I think I fixed it.
All right. Well, let's try and go on with the show. So we were talking about the COVID outbreaks that was going on. We said that we were going balls blaze right now. We had Christian Arroyo, Kike Hernandez, both test positive out in Cleveland. Christian Arroyo tested positive on Sunday. Kike tested positive last Friday. The world was burning for the Red Sox. It was just going to happen. Then what else ends up happening? We could go Monday. The first game against the Tampa Bay Rays. And then we have Martin Perez, Matt Barnes, Tom Goodwin is a close. He was close contact. Josh Taylor was close contact. Who else am I missing in this? Sawamura. Come on, guys. Tell me who else am I missing.
Well, there were a couple that happened later on, like Munoz and then, of course, Xander.
Right. So we had Xander, who actually ended up getting pulled out of the game, like in the bottom of the second. That's
yep.
That sucks. and it's just the world was burning on the Red Sox. And like you said, Gyro ended up testing positive, which that's got to suck. I mean, he went all year, did test positive for COVID. He's been down in the minors playing for the Woo Sox all year. And then they call him up and bam, he gets COVID. So now he's stuck in Tampa in a hotel. I mean, Xander's going to be stuck in a hotel as well. Kike's stuck in Cleveland. Arroyo's stuck in Cleveland. It's just a whole shit show. When the news came out, I was one of those guys that one of those people that was just like, Jesus Christ, just pull the plug. Just pull the plug. And then come to find out, I mean, the Red Sox ended up taking, you know, they beat Cleveland and then they take a split against the best team in the American League, the Tampa Bay Rays, which I'm sorry, I didn't think that we, you know, I think I called a split in the last episode. And I think I called a split and it was different games. I know I called that it seemed like we were going to lose the Nick Pivetta game, which I was correct. And Ryan Brady can kiss my ass. I'm not going to shit on Pivetta because that's his baby. But I think I called the Pivetta game and the Erod game. I think those were the two games I thought we were going to lose. And it just so happens that we ended up losing the Pivetta game and the bullpen game that Brad Peacock ended up starting. We'll get into that in a little bit. Well, what were you guys' reaction when you found out that all these players started testing positive for COVID? Ed, go ahead.
My reaction? Fuck. I mean, that just, it was, you know, it was such a rough August, and you're thinking that there's finally going to be some relief in sight, and then, nope, they took three series, and immediately they dropped that last game against Cleveland, which was rough, and everybody just suddenly is gone, you know, you're losing, you know, at first it wasn't even that bad, it was just, you know, I mean, yes, it sucks losing Kike and Arroyo, but those guys, at least Munoz was in the, you know, he was in AAA, you bring him up, you've got some depth there. But then you start losing the bullpen, and then, you know, last and certainly not least, I think emphatically the worst loss there is losing Xander mid-game. I mean, I just remember seeing that that replay with Verdugo going, where's Bogey?
Yeah,
and, what happened, you know, to it's Bogey? Just like, that's your captain, though. That's the guy that started the All-Star game, has been having maybe not the best season on the team, certainly one of the best seasons on the team. And it's, you know, the offense already wasn't performing. Now you're bringing up guys like Jack Lopez. You're starting Jonathan Araúz, who's, you know, probably still not ready to be starting. And, you know, I got to hand it to you, Brad. I got to tell you that you were absolutely right about one thing that I wasn't expecting, and that was how contagious Chris Sale's leadership is, because he really set the tone yesterday. And if they end up – if they end up making the playoffs a month from now, I think you can really point that game yesterday as the moment when they when things started to I don't want to say get fixed, but when the world stopped burning quite as much.
I agree 100% on that. Sale was the fire stopper. He had to be. I mean, he only had three strikeouts, which is odd for Chris Sale, you know. And I mean, he did get a bunch of double plays behind him, and that was fantastic. He went six innings, which was the most he's gone this season so far. Granted, I believe it's four. He's pitched four games. So, yeah, Sale had to do what he had to do yesterday. Isaac, your thoughts?
A lot like Ed said, you know, I was like, crap. But I am very glad with how it turned out that we're going 4-3 in these last seven games, which is very, very good. I'll take that any day. Munoz, Araruz had to be what it had to be. Even Jack Lopez, they're doing their job on defense. That's all I care about. And I do think it does lead, like, the top players like JD, Dever, Schwarber to motivate them more. Like, they know they have to carry the offense now. And JD hit very good this series. Dever's got some knocks. So I'm just very glad that we split against Tampa, because when all that happened, I was like, we might get swept.
Definitely, that was definitely the route that I was going. You know, we called the games the night before, and I said that we'll split the series, and then all the COVID shit happened. And once that happened, it was just literally the world was burning, and there's no other way to explain it, you know. So it was a shit show on Monday. It definitely was. And it didn't help that Pivetta didn't, you know, have his A game. And we thought that Pivetta would have his A game because of the fact that he pitches well in a climate-controlled environment. And the last time he pitched in Tampa Bay, or St. Petersburg, because it's not Tampa Bay, he actually had like a perfect or a no-hitter going on into the sixth inning. So, I mean, he just didn't have his A game that day. The next thing I wanted to talk about is, I know, Isaac, you and I have actually kind of like touched on it, like in the chat. Carlos Fables is probably the worst third base coach I've seen in quite some time. And I don't usually complain about coaches. I've been questioning Cora and his management of the bullpen and whatnot, but you can't tell me that it's the players that are running through the stop signs. You can't tell me that JD Martinez is like, I'm gonna run my ass, that I can't run faster than like 2 miles per hour, you know, from second base and go home on a hit to left field to a guy that has an arm. You can't tell me that Schwarber's getting the sign to go from, you know, he just came back from a hamstring injury. You can't tell me it's on him. Christian Vasquez being thrown out at the plate and the ball beat him by like 3 miles. We got to start talking about Carlos Fables and what the fuck are you doing? Isaac, you and I have talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm going to let you take this and talk about this.
Okay. So we're not the fastest team. We're definitely far from that. I don't know where we are in rankings when it comes to stolen bases, but I definitely know we're in the bottom 10. He should realize our offense is very good. Like, yeah, we may be inconsistent, whatever, but we still have one of the best offenses in MLB. You cannot give the other team automatic outs when, let's say, Renfro is up against a lefty. Renfro is one of the best hitters against left-handed pitchers in baseball. Like yesterday, we won that game, but he got very lucky. If he didn't send Vaz, Renfro was up against a lefty. You never know what could have happened, but that's a great matchup for Renfro. And today, I noticed he, like, punched Devers in the face. I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, that should get him fired. Like, Devers was heated at the ump and Feblis. Like, you don't do that to a player. Y'all can look at it, but I've kind of recognized that.
You saw what I said in the chat. It's like, yeah, he punched him in the face. And then Grant's like, oh, that's what I thought. Like, he kind of pushed him. It's like, no, he really did. Like, he like punched him. Like, you can't be doing that, especially to one of the best hitters on the team. Like, granted, Rafi was being a little dick, but he had every right to be.
When Devers is mad, that means he knows he did something.
Right. And then I love the fact that JD and Schwarber were just like sitting there, like talking to him about it. Like, come on, dude, let's talk about this. Let's calm down a little bit. You know, his big brother's out with COVID. So Xander would literally probably be like, all right, puto, you need to stop me. You know, come on, cabrón. But Feblis, what the fuck, man? Ed, you got anything on that? Have you seen any of these things?
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible.
What I can say about that is really, you shouldn't be noticing the third base coach. You know, a good third base coach, you're just not going to want to talk about him. And it's weird how much this has happened this season, where a guy like Vasquez or Martinez has gotten thrown out of the plate on something that they had absolutely no business running on, that they don't end up sliding because it's not even going to be anywhere close to it and they don't want to get hurt. Like, it's been bad. It's been real bad. I wouldn't be surprised if we don't see Feblis in that role next year, if he is with the team at all.
Yeah, I can actually say I don't remember seeing that many bad calls from Brian Butterfield.
No, I don't recall either.
Yeah, it's been pretty terrible.
Butterfield had his issues the year before he left, but he was not close to this bad.
Right. I mean, like, you didn't notice Butterfield doing stuff like this. It's like, yeah, when you barely notice that, like Ed said, if you start noticing the third base coach, then there's obviously a problem. All right, let's talk about the defense that the Red Sox have been having troubles with, because, you know, defense actually wins the games, and that's always been a thing. Like, you have good defense, the offense is there. You have to have the good defense. And the first two games was pretty tough.
Atrocious.
Yeah, pretty tough is a very lenient way of describing it. It was just bad. It was real bad.
I mean, do you blame it on the fact that, like, Gyro and Araúz was not used to the level of play? I mean, they both played in MLB before, obviously. Go ahead.
They're professionals. I don't think that you can put it on that. I mean, they've both spent extensive time in the majors at this point. Araúz, I know he got brought up very quick as a Rule 5 pick, but he spent all of last season in the majors. Meanwhile, Munoz had spent long periods in the big leagues before. He spent, I believe, half a season with the Cardinals, where he started for them for a good amount of that. It's not an excuse. I don't know what happened with that play, that interference play. That was bizarre. I don't know if he just lost track of what was happening or he wasn't paying attention, but no, just being a sudden call up isn't an excuse. You have to be ready when you get called up at that point.
Yeah, Isaac.
I don't think it has anything to do with major league experience. I mean, like Ed said, they're professionals. Munoz is mainly him, the one I'm getting on. His defense was so bad. And that's always been his issue. He's always been a free swinger. You know, he hits the ball hard sometimes. But the reason why he has not been in the majors is because of his defense and his very, very low walk rate. Araúz, he's an AAA player. I still give him time. I think he could be a solid utility player one day. But I'm okay with what he's done. I'm not expecting anything from him. From him, Lopez, and any of the other AAA players, I'm just expecting good defense. That's all I care about, which they have done since Lopez came up. They've been really good.
Ed, actually, Ed, Ed actually made a real funny post earlier today. I'll let you say what you posted, Ed. Go ahead.
Wait, which one was it?
The Jack Lopez.
Oh, yeah. They've won two games since Jack Lopez came up. Does he have any hits? No, but they've won two games against a team that's been absolutely demolishing them the last 2 months. So, you know, I think Jack Lopez is the dark knight of the team. He's the hero that we need, not the hero that we deserve.
I like the Batman reference.
Bogart's job
that's
is
Lopez for me.
What'd Jeopardy. You say?
That was a joke. Bogart's job is in jeopardy. I'm just kidding. He's the captain of this team, probably.
Yeah, absolutely. Bogart's ain't going nowhere. Not for Jack Lopez, at least. All right. The Chaim Bloom came out yesterday. They had a press conference that was supposed to be just for media. I actually ended up watching some of that because I forgot who it was. Someone posted the link to the Zoom call, and it was one of the Boston sports writing places. I'd give them credit, but I don't know. I don't remember who it was. It was just a random link I found. And he wanted to talk about the COVID outbreak that's been going on. You know, you got 8 players out because of COVID related issues. You know, either one has tested positive or they were a close contact. And a lot of the questions that came up were the fact, you know, why is MLB not postponing these games? And, you know, I was one of them. I really thought that they needed to postpone the games. I thought it was unfair that, you know, the Yankees got their game postponed. I believe that was July 16th. That was the game after the All-Star break. 3 of their players tested positive for COVID-19. MLB shut it down. And what happened? They ended up postponing the game until August 19th after the trade deadline. The Yankees ended up getting Rizzo and Gallo. And I'm not saying that those were the reasons why the Yankees ended up beating us, because we played pretty bad baseball at the time. But either way, it's like if we played that game, there was a chance that we could have won. If we didn't wait to play a 7-inning doubleheader almost a month later or a month or so later. And then the Nationals ended up having an outbreak where 3 players and I believe it was 9 staff members ended up testing positive for COVID-19. And they shut down the game against the Phillies and like right away. So I was just like, well, why aren't we shutting it down for the Red Sox? I mean, like, you're doing it for these games and you're doing it for these teams, you know, the Yankees being number one, but you're not going to do it for the Red Sox. And then it comes out that, you know, Heim's like, you know what? We're going to play. We're going to do this thing. We're going to do what we have to do. There's not enough games left in the season for us to postpone games. And they're right. I mean, we have the Rays again next week, starting on Monday, but it's not like we can play a doubleheader against them because they were at home. But what were you guys' thoughts on the fact that they didn't postpone the games?
I was surprised. I was, especially with what you said with the Yankees earlier in the season and how quick they've been to postpone games. I was very surprised that they didn't. And I don't know if that's because we're as late as we are in the season, so it's just tougher to do, or it's a different situation. I really was surprised. I've been seeing a lot on Twitter about like Manfred being a homer for the Yankees and stuff like that, which I don't, you know, I mean, I don't think that it's that. I do think it's a little questionable that the Yankees got to go do theirs after the trade deadline, but that just seems like, you know, typical MLB poor planning rather than anything else that just happened to benefit the Yankees this time. I don't think they're organized well enough to be like, okay, this is the Yankees year or something like that. But I am definitely surprised that they played.
Isaac?
I'm both. I am surprised that I'm not. The reason why I am surprised is obviously because we had 7 to 8 cases and it was just spreading around randomly and quickly. And the players refer to like kind of social distance, wear masks, you know, do their thing so they could keep playing and not hurt the team. Chaim did say that he was disappointed in the players who weren't vaccinated, and he did say that it is something they might have to talk about during the winter meetings in the off season, because it could be very harmful to a team. And like Ed was saying with the Yankees situation, I think it's because they had games back in June and July, it was different, where you can like play a doubleheader later on in the year, where we're in September. Like this is, we're close to October baseball. There's not many games left. We have no choice but to play these. We can't schedule a doubleheader randomly.
Right. It definitely. Heim Bloom has a way to put things in perspective. I know that when he does talk to the media, he does a lot of talking, but he gives no information.
I love it.
It's like he's giving you the box to open for the gift. And then when you open it, there's nothing there, but you're like really excited that you got that box because you expected more than what you got. I agree with him in a sense, and we have to keep going through this. You know, we have to put our best foot forward. And Schwarber keeps saying it. He's like, next man up. I mean, I know that was the mentality or the saying for the Yankees, I believe, in 2019. And it kind of irks me that gets pinned on them. Like people are like, oh, wasn't that the Yankees saying or whatever? But no, it really is. It's really the next man up. I mean, Jack Lopez comes up. Jairo Munoz comes up. Jonathan Araúz comes up. You know, you got all these guys coming up. And then you got my favorite player of all time, Danny Santana. He doesn't have to finish his IL stint and his rehab stint, you know, like, and if nobody actually understands, I hate Danny Santana. But Isaac keeps telling me that he has a good bat and he started hitting before he went down and he's a good defensive mitt and he'll be a bench person if we make it into October. It doesn't matter. I still hate him. Let's continue on. You didn't say he was a good bat. He was starting to hit before he went on the IL is what you said.
He was. He had a good game in Toronto against Robbie Ray, who's like the second best pitcher in the AL this year. He's a switch hitter. He's very versatile defensively. And believe it or not, at center field, he is our second best defender there via analytics behind Kike. He shows some value. He's not good, but I think he's a fine bench guy.
You really want me to talk good about Danny Santana? I'll just say it. I'll say it. He walked two times tonight. That's good.
Against Shane McClanahan, that's a good thing.
Did he walk twice against him? I know one of them was against once. Him. Okay.
The other one was.
So might I play the role of peacemaker here? Can we agree that he's at least more useful than Marwin Gonzalez?
Yes. Yes.
And all honesty, like with the COVID outbreak and whatnot. We could have probably used Marwin.
I take Jack Lopez over Marwin.
But when Marwin's hitting from the left side, he's impossible to watch.
I love how he like he literally does this. He's like
he cannot hit a curveball to save his life.
it's literally he That's him. That is him. He's like, come on, dude. Like, why is your? Why
He'd be kind of useful right now, but you know, bad timing.
Yeah, right. Whatever. He's with Houston now. That's their problem. Let's talk about how the Red Sox have been playing terribly for like the past month, and are still two games over the A's, and actually. Because the Yankees didn't have a game today, they are 1.5 games back.
Oh, I did forget the Yankees. That. That's great.
They are 1.5 games back of the Yankees and for the first wild card. And what that means is that we get the game. I believe we play the Yankees 3 more times.
Yeah, we do at Fenway in 3 weeks. I've been saying this, but if we can keep it to like a 1 or 2 game like lead. Till that series, that's huge. And plus, our schedule in the last 10 games is a lot easier than the Yankees. The Yankees' last 10 games, they have Tampa and Toronto.
We have our last 10 games. We have Baltimore. 1, 2, 3. Baltimore, New York, the Mets, Yankees, Baltimore, and Nationals.
Our last 14 games, yeah.
Yeah, if we need to destroy the Mets because they're so fucking – like, the Mets are metting so bad right now. The Mets will met. That's literally all they'll do.
I like Stroman, and I feel bad for him.
I love Stroman. I seriously do. I know a lot of people that don't like Stroman. I actually – I like Stroman so much, I purchased his stuff, HDMH, the Height Doesn't Measure Heart. That's his company. I fucking love it, dude. That guy's such a short dude, and he's just his attitude and whatnot. He might not be the best pitcher, but I just love him.
Honestly. He's a good pitcher, though.
Yeah, pitcher. He is a good pitcher. I'm just saying, he might. Okay, maybe he's better than I thought. Whatever. I like Stroman. I actually will put up a Mets game to watch Stroman pitch. I actually went to a Mets game where he pitched. He unfortunately lost, but he had a no-hitter going on until the sixth inning. And he gave up a hit, and then he lost, which sucked. But, yeah, it's amazing how poorly the Red Sox have been playing lately. And they're 1.5 back of the New York Yankees. And the fact the Yankees went on a 13-game win streak. And then I believe they went on a 4-game losing streak just recently.
Yeah, and they won yesterday with Cole.
Yeah, and I'm sure Michael K was Orioles,
which sucks.
I'm going to laugh. Well, they got Means pitching tomorrow.
Yeah, Means against Cortez. The Orioles could win that game, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's really their bullpen that could implode.
Yeah, I know.
So I mean unless Means pitching all 9 fucking innings, there's still like a chance they could lose. They can lose that game. I'm not gonna lie. That's a pretty hefty lineup that Means is going to have to face, especially being a lefty. You're going to have to go up against Judge, Stanton, Voit. I mean, that right there is kind of would scare me being a lefty unless you're Sale. Fuck them. All right, let's move on. So I wanted to talk about a partnership that we have right now. We have a partnership with a watch company called Le Terrain out of Jersey. They make these amazing luxury watches. Now, if you like luxury watches, you would want to go check this out because they have these. It's a luxury watch at an affordable price. Check out Le Terrain watches. They have the affordable Red Crest watch that starts off at $89. And their prices vary from $89 to about $390. So make sure to check out their watches at LeTerrain.com and use promo code Pesky to get 10% off your purchase. I will put that in the let me go ahead and put that up. Let's talk about the Chris Sale post-game conference. Did you guys end up seeing that?
Yeah, I saw some of it. God, again, I feel like an idiot for doubting that guy's leadership. Like when you were talking about that the last time I was on, I thought, what could this guy possibly, he's been with the team all season, like what could he be adding by pitching? Well, you get the press stuff, and you get him trying to run out for the seventh inning, even though he's supposed to be out of the game. Like you get him saying that Garrett Whitlock should win Rookie of the Year. I mean. Dude's just a great teammate. He really is. And he's done a really good job of coming back, even though he's been great in some of his starts. This isn't 100% Chris Sale right now. No. We're going to see that next year. But he's doing what an ace has to do. He is making he is essentially being their stopper, and he doesn't have his best stuff. Like, he is a true ace. He has grown into a true ace.
Right. Isaac?
I love what he said about Whitlock. I mean, his leadership is really what this team like needed, and it's showing on the field. And I really admire he compliments pitchers. He even complimented Seabold. Like, he has really good stuff. And from what it sounds like, Seabold can be a very good pitcher one day. Just what he does, his words, you know, his attitude, I just love so much because, you know, the young pitchers see that. They're like, I want to be like him one day. You know, I wish I was Chris Sale. And I just love that Chris Sale's on the Boston Red Sox. And I want him forever.
It seems like he would be that type of person where, fuck, I was out for basically 2 years because of the fact that I had to go get Tommy John surgery. I took you guys for, you know, however much he was getting paid annually. I think he'll be like, you know what? I've made my money. Why don't you guys make me an offer? I'll probably take it. You know? As long as it's not like something stupid, like, oh, here's $16 million for 3 years. That would be fun.
There are two more things I really want to say about Sale also, and I know this is sounding a lot like a Chris Sale circle jerk, but I just was, you know, I was pretty blown away by the whole thing. There was, back when he was rehabbing, he was on the bus with the minor leaguers. He did a start on the road, and he wouldn't, you know, he'd stay at the same hotel as them, take the same bus as them. He didn't want any special treatment, and that's got to pay off right now with half the AAA team having to support them. They know the guy, you know. They've played with him, they fought in the trenches with him, and that's gotta help as in some sense or another. Just again from that leadership perspective,
I remember hearing the story about how. He was up in, I believe, Portland, and he took all the guys out to eat. And that's typically what a person like Chris Sale would do, you know? Everybody's going to eat pretty well because, you know, you got this guy who makes multi-million dollars. He's going to be rehabbing here. We're all probably going to get some good steaks and whatnot. I love the seventh inning thing where he ran in. He's like, yeah, he knew for a fact. There's no fucking way he didn't know that he wasn't going back in. He was trying to slip it by fucking Cora. He's like, I'm gonna run back in, and then up. What do you mean? Oh, okay, I'll come back. You know, it would have been fun to watch Sale pitch in the seventh inning. But yeah, you're right. He had Lopez. He had Aruz. I remember there was a double play where Lopez is running back in, and you know, you don't see it all that often on the TV. I'm sure it happens a lot though, but he gave daps to Lopez, and I thought that was cool. Like that small thing, I thought was cool, especially coming from Sale and the fact that he. Did that to a guy like Lopez who has been in the minors for, what, 9 years?
Yep. Complete journeyman, 28 years old, making his debut. It's, you know, it's just that's what you want out of a leader. It's like Tom Brady introducing himself to everybody on the practice squad as if they don't already know who he is. And like, I heard a story about Brady, like saying one thing that everybody on the team does well before the Super Bowl, just stuff like that, where it doesn't matter if you're Xander Bogaerts or Jeff Lopez, you're a part of the team. And you know, that's how teams can come back. That's how teams can be resilient when everybody has a role and they know what their significance is.
Yeah. Sale's just that guy. He's definitely a leader. And I was kind of shocked to see it was him and Xander. I was shocked to see that JD was a part of it. But when they called that players only meeting, that's what you need. You need somebody, you know, Chris Sale yelling at people, you know, I can't see Xander yelling at somebody, and I don't think I could see JD really yelling at somebody. I can definitely see Chris Sale yelling. He's definitely one of those guys. I want to move on and talk about Bobby Dalbec. The fact that he won the Rookie of the Month for August. What a fucking change, huh?
He's making contact.
How many home runs did he have in the month of August there, Isaac?
I am pretty sure he had seven. Seven home runs. I think he had more RBIs than games he played in August. His stat line was ridiculous. He had like a 400 OBP, like a 700-something slugging. Like, I was like, "Wow, so, is this
so?" He's got 1,205 OPS. His OBP is 431. He's second in slugging with 774. So let me repeat that. Among AL players with 50 plus plate appearances in the month of August, Bobby Dalbec ranked first in OPS at 1,205, second in on-base percentage, 431, second in slugging, 774, and eighth in average, 339. And also, I want to give a little bit of credit to Red Sox Notes. It is at Sox Notes. Very good profile to follow if anybody wants to follow a good Red Sox. It's easy to forget that Bobby is still a rookie who hasn't even been around for a full season. It's yep. true. It really is.
Can I say something real quick?
Hold on. Let me finish this real quick. In 131 career games, he has 26 home runs, 77 RBIs, and an 804 OPS. Most rookies would trade places for numbers like that. 100%. Go ahead, Isaac. What do you have to say?
So something with Dalbec, his quality of contact actually ranks up there with the best hitters in the league. Judge, Trout, Otani, Votto, etc. So this is really what's helped him. So from the whole season before August, his strikeout percentage was 35%, which is terrible.
Right.
In August, that went to 25%, and his walk percentage went from 4.5% to 11% in August. So he's showing a lot of discipline. He's making more contact. That's all he needs to do, and he'll become a great hitter in this league because his quality of contact is, like, very, very elite.
Yeah, he's showing more patience. He's not swinging at garbage. He's not doing the Michael Chavis thing where he's swinging at, you know, pitches up in his eyes all the time. You're going to get batters that are going to do that. We saw Schwarber do that a couple times in the series. You see JD, he'll do it. Devers will do it. So, you know, it's going to happen. But Dalbec's actually showing some discipline, which is awesome. It's fantastic. Other news before we start talking about the games here, guys. Delino DeShield, his tenure with the Red Sox organization ended. The Red Sox traded him to the Reds for cash. It seems like this trade was because they knew they were going to be trading the for Brad Peacock cash considerations, which we'll talk about that as well. The Red Sox also claimed Taylor Motter off of waivers from the Rockies. This seems like a depth situation because of what happened with Xander and Gyro. So he's a shortstop, a second baseman, and an outfielder. So utility guy. So anything else before we start talking about the games, guys?
You know what I want to know? I want to know because they traded cash for DeShields from Texas the first time. So I want to know if they made the amount back that they traded for him or if they had to sell him for less. I'd be really curious about that.
That's something I'd have to look into. That'd be kind of stupid.
Like, what are these cash considerations? Is this like a Daniel Nava thing where it's like $1 and a bucket of balls or something? Or like, what are the cash considerations? What does that mean, considerations? Like, they might pay you for them? I don't know what that means.
I'm not sure either, bro. Not sure. All right, let's talk about the games. We had a shit show of a game for game one. The Red Sox ended up losing to the Rays 6-1. Pivetta definitely did not have his A game this night. He didn't seem to have trust in his fastball. He threw a lot of his curveballs. The game started off with him sitting around 93-94. I know, Isaac, you and I were talking about this and mentioning this. Brady's boy... Brady ended up being a little upset that we were talking a little negative about Pivetta because he's in love with him. Though the team really needed him to go about six innings, I wouldn't mind going into the sixth inning. He was only able to go five innings. He gave up six hits, four runs, all of them earned. But the biggest problem for Pivetta that night was his walks. He ended up walking five. This pretty much shows, like, every Red Sox fan had to be like, ugh, when this happens. The very first pitch of the game, he gives up a homer. It's Lau. For some reason, Lau just ends up destroying the Red Sox. I don't get it. He ended up throwing 108 pitches. What are your guys' thoughts on Pivetta's outing for that game? Isaac, go ahead.
It's his fastball command. That's his main issue. When he doesn't have that, he's too reliant on his curveball, and that's happened a lot of outings where he sucked. For instance, that happened this game, and he threw a lot of hanging pitches. Results weren't bad. I mean, the defense didn't help him either, but it's something he needs to really work on. It's his fastball command. That's been his major issue. It's something with his release point, and I hope they're working it on him, but when he does not have his fastball command, he is not effective. Brady needs to know this.
We'll have to get you on an episode with Brady, and we'll discuss the Pivetta situation. Ed, do you have any opinions on the Pivetta outing?
If he's going to have to learn how to just throw strikes in order to live up to his potential, which it's interesting because I would suspect that it's probably something mechanical with him that he needs, because this was an issue in Philadelphia also. He's got great stuff, but he almost seems like he's nibbling a lot of the time. And I can't imagine any coach telling him that he has to paint the corners or anything like that. Like he's got good stuff. I think he just needs to figure out how to a better way to harness it. I mean, obviously I have no idea what that would be. I'm not a baseball coach, but I think that's going to be the big difference maker for him. If he ever is going to become something beyond a number four starter, the potential's there, but he's really, you know, how long is it going to be there before people say this is what he is?
Right. No, I definitely understand where you're coming from. It seems like, they changed not the mechanics so much, but they changed basically what Erod was trying to do. And we'll talk about it for the last game because he pitched fantastic. But it seems like he's more of a contact hitter now. And he's trying to get those weak contacts. That's getting him out. I mean, the guy threw 94 pitches through six innings today. He could have gone, you know, he made it into the seventh inning. He threw 94. So we'll talk about that. But that's really what I think Bush was working on with him. And maybe that's something that they can work on with Pivetta. That's my opinion. In this game, Dalbec actually ended up getting the only run. He hit a piss missile for a home run in the second. That ended up tying the game. That was in the second. That was fun for like 3 minutes. this actually kind of pisses me off. Schwarber, Martinez, Bogarts, and Duran. I'll give Duran a pass on this, but Schwarber, Martinez, and Bogarts all struck out two times.
Was that against, what's his name? Rasmussen or whatever his name is?
Patino.
Yeah, it was against Patino.
Oh, that was Patino? Oh, yeah. No, there was really not an excuse for that one there.
Yeah, and Verdugo was the only batter with multiple hits in that game.
It's embarrassing.
It really is. It really is. Devers ended up booting a ball that could have prevented a run and possibly even been a double play with Nelson Cruz running. Isaac, I'm sure you remember that play.
Yeah. Somehow Robles should have actually gotten out of that situation with no runs. But after that, I was like, this is about to be like 10-1, isn't it?
It only ended up being 6-1. It sucked, but
game one has been the worst.
It was pretty bad. Espinal ended up making his big league debut. I felt kind of bad. This kind of sucks. This is your debut. Not only are you making your debut because of a COVID situation, you're making your debut. Your parents aren't, or your family's not even going to be around. And not even that. I think the worst part of this debut is it's at the Trot.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the Tropicana Field. I think that place is that place is such a shit show. They need to burn it down. And if they're not going to make another one, then another building or whatever, they need to just move to Montreal. Like, seriously, just get it over with. Do your thing. But Espinal made his big league debut. His first inning was really, really good. He went 1-2-3, gave up 2 hits and 2 runs for the night. Both of his hits or both of his runs were earned. And he walked one. He ended the night with an ERA at 9. Then after the game ended, he was optioned to Worcester, which I believe it was actually the taxi squad. And on this night, I was really upset, and I thought that this was, you know, like I said, the world was burning, and I posted in my notes that COVID is really going to cost this team, especially during a time like this. Now, at the beginning of the series, I couldn't actually think that I'd be on the podcast with half a smile on my face. You know, like, seriously, I didn't know that I'd be like, I thought this was going to be like probably the end of the Red Sox for the season. I definitely had no faith in the fact that we were going to be able to split. I don't think any of us actually had that. And if you did, you're fucking lying. One thing that I did want to bring up that had nothing to do with the Red Sox is Ohtani. On Monday, Ohtani ended up belting number 42, his 42nd homer of the season, which helped the Angels beat the Yankees. And the A's had an off day, so the Sox were 2 games up that day. And I believe that was that the game that Ohtani also stole home?
No, I think that was the next game, but he homered off of Heaney.
Yeah, he fuck Heaney. Like, I hope the Yankees like let him start against us and we actually do something. Oh, fucking Christ. So game two, the Rays ended up beating the Red Sox 8-5. The Red Sox made it interesting at the end, and people were like banging their heads, like, why is this team trying to grab me back in here? But in this game, Salamore had officially contracted COVID and was on the IL. Hunter Renfro was activated from the bereavement list. He had to go through all of his whatnots to get back on the field after his father passed away. And I thought that was a little quick, in my opinion. I'm not going to say anything like, oh, you can't come back that quick. I would have thought that he would have been out a little longer. Anything, guys? Like, did you guys think that was quick?
That game sucked.
I was talking about Hunter Renfro.
That game just sucked, man. I'm sorry. That game was just awful.
We gifted them that
I did appreciate the doubles Renfro put up. I was very happy to have Renfro back. I honestly, in his position, I would much. I would be out a lot longer than him,
given that situation.
And just considering all the stress that goes into the season, considering everything, I wouldn't have blamed him if he had taken a week or two off with what happened there. And just, you know, like, as generic as it sounds, you know, there's life outside of the game, you know? Right. There's life outside of this, and people have to deal with a lot. And
so,
you know, it says something about his toughness mentally that he was able to come back and do so well.
Right. The game ended up starting. They picked up Brad Peacock, like I said earlier. He was going to be the starter. This was a little strange because Peacock started a game on Friday, so he's getting short rest. He had a good look at first inning. He threw 7 pitches and didn't have such a terrible second inning. Then he gave up 4 in the third. Isaac, thoughts on Brad Peacock's outing?
Yep. Emergency starter. I didn't expect anything of him. You know, he's not good anymore. It happens. I mean, he was expected to just give them innings. That's really what they wanted, and he did his best. I can't really put the blame on him. The defense didn't help him out either. Like, Verdugo had a lazy throw to second base.
I actually wanted to stop you on that one. So when I was watching that, it seemed like he was in the middle of, like, he was going to throw it to third, and then as he was getting ready to throw it, he changed where he was throwing it. So I do realize that it was like a lazy throw, but it seemed like he was trying to throw it to third, and he changed the course. It still was a shitty throw. Lazy.
It was just frustrating, but Verdugo has to be more wise and cautious about the situation. He has to look at the bigger picture. Like, runners on first and third is a lot better than runners on second and third. And then the Franco single, Renfro hit Bobby's glove and Bobby missed it, and it was a disaster. The second game we literally gifted them the win. We had twice the hits, and our expected batting average was like 100 points higher than theirs.
Yeah, that's actually super frustrating. I wanted to actually look that up. What were your thoughts on Peacock's game?
He had a good 1-2-3 inning in the first. Loved all the puns that people were making before the game about how that inning, this is going to be a real feather in his hat. He's going to show us his true colors. I like that. Didn't really like anything after the first inning. There's a reason he wasn't in the majors this year. You know, there's a reason he hasn't what was it? I think 2018, 2019 was the last time he had a real role in a pen. He had good stuff for a while. Clearly, he's not 100% back, or this is just what he is now. I hate to say it, it is what it is. Right. Is he still on the roster right now? Are they going to use him again in a few days?
Maybe. I would assume so, especially if our bullpen is the way that it is, with Barnes, Salamora, Taylor. I mean, we've got Taylor, Salamora, Barnes, Darwinson. I mean, we did get Brazier back. I don't know if they're going to keep him. You'd have to imagine, I forgot Martin Perez was still a thing.
I think we'd all like to.
But back to your point with that, Isaac, you said that we were about 100 points higher with our expected batting average. We weren't actually that high. By the end of the game, it was 251 to 218.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't trying to like call you out. I wanted to check that because I remember that had 10 hits, and we ended up getting. I forgot how many of the runs we actually ended up getting in the last. We ended up getting 3 runs in the last 2 innings, like crazy, right?
Yeah, we had the tying run with Devers up, and he struck out against Kidridge.
Yeah, I hate Kidridge. Is it me, or does he remind you of the guy from the fucking the Blue Jays who like squats?
Romano. Yeah, I actually, it's. What, I hadn't even thought of Romano, that, but yes. Yeah.
I seriously like. I had a hard time. Like, I was like, wait, is it this guy that squats, or is it the guy from the Blue Jays that squats? I know Romano actually stopped squatting for a while. I don't know if he's still doing it. But every time he does it, I was like, what the fuck is this dude doing?
It's distracting. Yeah. Clearly it works, though. You know what was weird in that game also? David Robertson coming in to pitch. Like, that was somebody I'd totally forgotten about.
It really was weird. You know he's from Rhode Island?
I did know that, but only because he wanted to go somewhere closer to home a few years ago when he was a free agent, and he ended up with the Phillies, but the Red Sox were, like, in talks with him.
Yeah, he went from the Yankees, and then he was like, yeah, I want to stay local, and then he went to Phillies, even though the Red Sox were looking at him. So, bad game, shit game, fuck that game, horrible game. That game also saw Steven Gonsalves. He went 2 2/3. We also saw King Phillips. He came back. He went 3 innings. He gave up 1 hit, 1 run. He walked out. He walked 1. He struck out 2. Peacock went 2 1/3. He gave up 2 hits, 5 runs. That walks, right? And he gave up 2 walks. How do you give up five fucking runs
to a?
Like, how do you do it,
man?
Okay, so wait. He gave up two hits, so there's two. So that means three. Then he gave up. I'm fucking confused. His
he
ERA
might have hit some people with pitches too. I seem to remember.
He did. He ended up hitting Mejia, is what Isaac was saying. But his ERA is now at 19.29. Stephen Gonzalez, his is at 6.75. King Phillips is at 5.11. That just sucks.
Phillips deserves better.
Good.
What'd you say, Isaac?
I don't know why he's – Gonsalves looked good, and what I agree with Ed said. Valdez needs to stay. I don't know why he, like, got sent down. He had one bad outing, but he's proven himself he can do the job.
I'm sorry, but the migraine fucking outing that he had, and he, like, pissed all over the Yankees. Like, why? Why are we sending this fucking guy down? He should be crowned. You know, like, literally, he should be coming out of the bullpen. Like, you've got fucking – you've got Robles coming out with the fucking Undertaker's fucking theme. Why is this dude not coming out wearing a goddamn crown?
That would be amazing if that happened. Just one game. It doesn't have to do it every game, but, like, literally a golden crown he just has.
Like, he comes out.
Yeah, does he have, like, a scepter also? Like, that would be great.
Like, WWE, you know how they fucking, they crown, like, a king of the ring or whatever, and then they, like, bring the person out with, like, four people holding him on a fucking, yeah, fucking do that shit. I would love it.
Just have like the other reliever, like all the other relievers that have been bouncing up and down. Have like Austin Bryce carrying like one side of it. You can put Robles there. I love it.
Nah, we don't need somebody getting hurt.
it'll be fine.
All right, guys. Let's move on to the third game. The Red Sox ended up winning 3-2. The Red Sox had 9 hits, and the Rays had 8. Here's a fun fact. The expected batting average for the Boston Red Sox for the entire game was 197, and the Tampa Bay Rays were sitting at 251. How fantastic is that?
They kept throwing him out at the plate. That was the single best game I've seen Christian Vasquez have since that walk-off home run he hit against Cleveland a few years ago.
I have to admit that was probably one of the coolest things I've seen. I mean, that throw by Devers wasn't too clean. He picked it up horrible. And It was a terrible throw. But, I mean, Vasquez, if Vasquez doesn't get that, we're probably talking about Vasquez in a different light right now. And we're saying how much of a piece of shit he is. But because he did get that ball, he tagged him out. Who was it that he tagged out? Was it Randy Rosarena or was it? No, it was Wander Franco, wasn't it?
It was Franco or was it Wendell?
Yeah, I was going to say Wendell, who just had an awful game.
It was Margot and Wendell, I think. No, Margot and Franco. I think it was them.
It was just a great game for Vasquez. He hit that home run, too, which was just so clutch because they were down 2-1. They'd been winning 1-0. Sale gives up the 2-run homer to Franco, which was just a...
On a 300, like, hold on a second. I need to pull that shit right the fuck up because that was such a bullshit fucking home run. Okay, so that home run had an exit velocity of 95.2 miles per hour. All right, where the fuck was it? I just had it. Oh god. I lost it now. All right. It was a 95.2 mile per hour exit velocity. It had a 100 XBA.
Man. That's the kind of season it's been. You know, that's the kind of the last month with just shit like that just leaving the park, you know?
It would have been a home run in 8 of the 30. How many fucking teams do we have? Why am I drawing a fucking blank here?
30. You got it. 30.
Why do we have – I don't know why the fuck I was drawing a blank there. But it would have been a home run in 8 of 30 fucking parks. And, of course, the Trop was one of them. You fucking douchebags.
Fenway wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
That's a routine fly ball out.
Like, holy fuck, man. But – Chris Sale didn't have a lot of strikeouts in this game. I believe he only had – how many did he end up having, Isaac?
It might have been – was it three or four? It was one of those. I'll look.
I'm pretty sure it was three.
How many double plays? Yeah. Did he have more double plays induced than he did strikeouts? That's wild.
Right.
I think he had three double plays.
Yeah, either way, he had a lot of double plays.
If you have an elite changeup and you can locate it, that's what happens.
I love the way he turns around and looks to make sure that like somebody's there to get the ball. You know, like he doesn't get pissed either. Like, you know when he's pissed because then he like bites his lip a little bit. He like
he's got that little fucking glove.
Yeah, he like bites the glove and shit. Yeah. But it,
puppy.
He went six innings. That's what we needed from him. He went six innings. He gave up six hits, two runs, both of them earned. That was on the home run by Franco. Who, Jesus fucking Christ, I can't wait until that kid's on the Dodgers. That's what you keep saying. I had to take it.
But I call a lot of race fans that Neander fan base.
He went six innings. He gave up six hits, two runs, both earned. He walked two. He struck out three. And he didn't strike out a lot of people, but he still looks like he was getting into the groove. And this is the thing that can shut the fucking people up, like Dan Shaughnessy or Anthony Maserati, who can fucking suck it because – you know, Bobby Dalbec is actually doing good and Chris Sale actually pitched against, you know, a contending team and he still looks good. Then Garrett Whitlock came out. A lot of people are saying that he looked really good. In my opinion, he didn't look the best he's looked in a while. He didn't give up any runs, so I'm not going to say that he was bad. He did go two innings. He gave up two hits. He struck out one. His ERA is now at 1.52. And then Adam Ottavino comes in, and he shuts the door, two strikeouts, and his ERA is now down to 3.40. How did we feel about that game? I know the Red Sox won, but it was super close. And we had that Jarren Duran, who ends up actually being probably the player of the game because of that hit that just like dribbled right through that hole in right field. So what were your thoughts on that game?
He got a nice piece of it. You know, nothing's going to happen unless you swing the bat. And he won them that game with that hit, you know? So I would love for them to play a game where I'm not totally stressed out the entire night. I think that that's sort of the situation the bullpen's in right now. But honestly, Ottavino looked like he was in that form he hit like May and June when he was just lights out. He's been good. I don't think he's given up a run in his last seven appearances. He's looking better, and that's a huge, huge plus for the team if he's back to form. And between that and Whitlock, it's two good relief pitchers there. Barnes is coming back. And he'll be rested, so hopefully we see a little bit of the Barnes of old as well once that happens. Salamura will be rested. So I'm starting to feel a little bit better about the bullpen, but I mean, it's hard to look at anything other than what Chris Sale did, though, especially as you were saying, didn't strike a lot of people out, found a way to do it. And, I mean, I've been gushing over him all night, but it's just that was such a – it was just such an impressive performance, you know?
Right. Isaac?
First with Sale, his command, it was off, like you could clearly tell, but that's what aces do. When their command is off, they figure out ways how to pitch and win ball games. He induced a lot of ground balls, double plays when he needed them. That's what an ace does. So great job for Sale. The Christian Vasquez game, he basically won that game for us.
How hard is it for you to actually talk good about Christian Vasquez?
Barely. Like today he was dog shit, but I'm not gonna talk about it. Like I'm not gonna slander him today for what he did yesterday. That was a huge win. Like give him props to that. That's the Vasquez I want to see. Ottavino, that was like his best outing in like the last 3 months,
he found his slider, and that's why he was struggling all of August. His slider, he was missing it. And he struggles against lefties, and he got, like, the lefties out so easily. I'm like,
this is you were a little pissed off about that. You were like, you got three lefties coming up. Why are you not putting Fudge in?
Yeah.
And then Ottavino comes in, and you're just like, maybe I should shut up.
I love Fudge. Fudge is my guy, but Ottavino looked good. He looked real good.
He did look good.
Yeah. Even though we were winning in the bottom of the ninth inning with two outs, Ottavino, you know, I love Ottavino, but I still get that, like, with the way everything's been going for the Red Sox the past month and change, I'm still sitting here like, fuck. And it's also the Tampa Bay Rays who scored the most runs in the last three innings. You know, from the seventh inning on, they scored over 200-something runs. And they have the most come-from-behind wins. So it was one of those, like, man, I got to clench my butthole type thing and make sure that these guys actually do this. One thing that I wanted to bring up is Colin McHugh. Red Sox legend Colin McHugh. Son of a bitch. This guy didn't pitch a fucking inning for us last year because he was like, you know what? I got my money. I'm just going to go home. And I won't do anything. And then he comes back. He pitches for the Rays. And he's like, fuck you. Fuck you, dude. Like, seriously. All right, let's move on to the last game. And then we'll talk some more about, like a player of the series or something. New little segment. So the next game today, actually, the Red Sox ended up winning 4-0. Now, I'm going to talk about this now because you kind of made me look this up, Isaac. The Red Sox had 9 hits. The Rays had 5 hits. And the expected batting average was .239 for the Red Sox and .201 for the Tampa Bay Rays. Fantastic. Let's take a look here. In the first inning, the first 1, 2, 3, 4, the first 4 actual contacts for the Red Sox all were over 100 miles per hour. Renfro got a single at 109.3 miles per hour. That was the exit velocity off the bat. JD Martinez, he ended up lining out to the center fielder. That was 106 miles off the bat. Rafael Devers singled. His was 107.6 miles per hour off the bat. And Bobby Dalbec had his was 104.6 miles per hour off the bat. So they were hitting him pretty hard at the beginning of the game. What was his name? Shane McClanahan. They were hitting him pretty hard right off the bat. Isaac, I want you to start off. You wrote some notes on this, so go ahead and take it over.
So my overall thoughts on the game, that was a complete win. That was great fundamental baseball. Everybody did what they needed to do. I love that. That's the baseball I love to watch. But we hit McClanahan very, very good. He's probably their best starter for a rookie. He's disgusting. Like, he's a future Cy Young winner. Dalbec continues. I think all of our runs scored were with two outs, so that's a good thing. Garrett Richards, 3 scoreless innings out of the bullpen, got the save too, and that was really important because he saved everybody's arm for Cleveland. Didn't have to use Ottavino. That was huge. So tomorrow, if we have a small lead, we can use our guys we want to use. So props to Richard. He's been incredible out of the bullpen.
He's got a .73 ERA out of the bullpen.
And last thing I want to mention is we have not lost a series in our last 4. So good baseball.
That's actually pretty impressive, especially with the fact that we can play pretty shitty baseball in the past month and change. Ed.
The sky might not actually be falling. That was a fun game to watch, honestly. Just as a fan of baseball, it was a well-played game.
good performance by Erod. That's as good as we've seen him all year. I'm sure Bailey is feeling extremely validated right now. Great performance by Richards again. I did not expect him to be particularly good as a reliever, but man, I mean, he's got that option for next year. I don't know if I'd want to pick that up because it's still like, I think $10 million or something like that, but he's really changed the conversation for his value to a team. He's really looked quite good in that role. Isaac, you want to say something?
Yeah. So about Richards and the options you mentioned, guys like him who can go multiple innings out of the bullpen and be dominant, if he shows it this September and possibly in October, if he like succeeds in that, I think you got to accept it because those guys are super important. Like, look at Drew Pomeranz. When he was a reliever, he had the same role. He was like insanely good. He would go two innings for the Brewers and the Padres, and he was automatic. It's something to look forward to. It's not the end of the world if they decline it when he becomes really good, but maybe this is who he is now, and he's very, very effective. You never know.
It could be a very interesting pen next year because I personally would like to see I would like to see Whitlock in the rotation, and me too, I think Tanner Houck, if he if he doesn't develop a third pitch that's really effective, he could be an absolute monster for two innings a week. Like they could have a real two headed beast there for the seventh and eighth inning with Richards and Houck.
I personally think that don't think that Bloom is going to pick up that option. But I also don't see with Richards the way that he's pitched as a starter this year. I don't see him able to command what he would want. I don't think anybody's going to see him as a starter anymore. And I think his value is going to go down at like $10 million for a bullpen like this. I wouldn't be opposed to. It is pricey, but I mean, you got to think Bloom declined to pick up. He didn't pick up Martin Perez's option last year, and in the offseason he signed him for less. And that's fair. They also have a team option this year for Martin Perez, which I hope they decline.
That's fine.
Richards, on the other hand, I think they can get him cheaper, honestly. And that all depends. It might depend on how Richards feels about the Boston media and whatnot, because I know he got a lot of shit for how he – I'm not even going to say how he pitched, but his attitude kind of sucked. You know? Like, I don't know. I just can't wait for my Richards jerseys to show up. You know, I have people actually going, this isn't a thing, is it? I'm like, no, it's 100% a thing. I bought a Richards jersey, and I can't wait for it to come in.
I love it. You better wear that as soon as it comes in. You're wearing it for that episode,
motherfucker. Who are you talking to? yeah, fucking great game, guys. It was fun to watch. We ended up shutting out the Tampa Bay Rays. I do want to bring up something that I just saw as a tweet, and I want to give a shout-out to them. The Greenville Drive had a four-man complete game shutout.
Yes, they did.
No hit. So shout-out to the Greenville Drive and the four gentlemen that pitched that game. And, do you guys have anything else that you want to talk about?
I just want to say with that game, that was Jeremy Wu Yeeland, who was, I think he was a fourth round pick last year in the draft. That was his first game at High A. He just got brought up from Salem. So he walked four, struck out nine. Heck of a game for him, though. 22-year-old kid out of, I think he went to University of Hawaii. Don't quote me on that, but, He's an interesting pitcher. Still has some control issues, but obviously the stuff's been effective so far.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about the player of the series. Who are we going with?
Sale. It's got to be Sale for me.
That's a tough one.
I don't. I can't go with Sale.
I don't think it's Sale.
Sale did do good. He did fantastic. I mean, especially with the fact that Eddie outperformed him today. I can't go with Sale.
But the situation's totally different. Sale was doing it when the world was on fire. You know, they were talking about not even playing that game prior to it, and he came in and just took the whole team on his back.
Hold on, let Isaac talk.
Sorry.
Oh, you're good. I don't care. I'm gonna go with E-Rod. He matched up against the Rays' best starter, McClanahan, on the road, and he outdueled him against I think the Rays have the best record in baseball. They might. I don't know, but you know what I mean. He outdueled him, pitched a wonderful game against the Rays, which was huge, and got us an important win in the standings because the Athletics won. So I'm giving it to E-Rod.
Actually, they are the third best team in baseball right now. The Dodgers and the Giants are tied with a winning percentage of .634, and they have a .627 winning percentage.
I think 2 days ago, the Rays had the best record in baseball. I saw MLB tweet it.
Yeah, it's true. I'm actually also going to go with E-Rod. I think that E-Rod pitched a fantastic game today. He showed big balls. He was doing his thing. And in all honesty, when he got pulled in the seventh inning, he shouldn't have been. He should have gotten out of it. And I know Isaac was really upset the fact that he walked Wander Franco. But in all honesty, Franco is probably like one of those. He's one of those pesky little bastards that just he doesn't expand the strike zone, and it gets a little annoying when you got that call like it's near the strike zone and you're not going to get it from the umpire. So we got two for E-Rod, one for Sale. So we got pitchers. That's where we're going. The two last pitchers, starting pitchers, have won the. Players of the series. Now, let's go ahead and talk about the upcoming series with the Cleveland Indians. I know that we are facing
Quantrill, Evaldi.
Evaldi, Houck, and I believe who else Pivetta. Is Pivetta. They're already in Boston, from what I understand. Also, to anybody that is listening this far into the episode, please know that the Boston Red Sox have mandated that there are going to be – not going to be. There is a mask mandate at Fenway Park now, no matter your vaccination status at all. So we got Evaldi versus Cal Quantrill. We got Tanner Houck versus Eli Morgan. And then we got Nick Pivetta versus Zach Plesac. Isaac, let's go. Who do you got going for game one? Who do you got for game one? Red Sox or Cleveland?
Since Evaldi's at Fenway, he's a lot better at Fenway than he is on the road. I say Red Sox win 5-1.
We'll just go with who's going to win. Tanner Houck, or as Ed likes to call him, Hook, and Eli Morgan. Red Sox or Cleveland?
I say Sox, and I think Sox lose a third game. So 2 out of 3.
All right. All right, Ed?
Game one, I think Indians. I think Evaldi got the better of Quantrill before. I don't think it's going to happen this time, but I think it's going to be a close one, real low scoring. Second one, I think the Indians. And third one, I think the Red Sox. And I'm saying that because I want the Red Sox to win the series, and every time I say that they're going to lose 2 of 3, they end up winning the series. So
you're using reverse psychology here.
I'm going to try that until it doesn't work.
Reverse psychology here?
Exactly. It's worked the last two times, and then when I said they were going to sweep, they got annihilated. So, right, you know. Well,
I'm going to go with a sweep.
Ooh. Okay.
I like it. I would love that to happen.
I'm not patting myself on the back or anything, but I'm 2 for 2 so far in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So I might not have the games right when it comes to them losing, but I did call the Indians game. I thought they were going to lose the first game because the pitcher was such shit. And they basically did lose the game until he came out. And then they won the one game one of the two games that I thought they were going to, they lost the third game and I thought they were going to win that one. Ooh, so
Cleveland's kind of hot.
What'd you say?
They're hot. They have a 4-game winning streak, which is good. So, I feel like they're due to lose.
Right. So I'm going with a sweep. We've, like Isaac said, I like Eovaldi at Fenway. That's gonna be a thing. I do think that. I think if we're gonna lose any of those games, the last two games are actually kind of hard for me because I don't know how Houck is going to pitch, and he's been. After he goes through that third at the lineup for the third time, he kind of implodes. That's really what it goes. Let's call a spade a spade. And I'm not 100% sure on how Plesak's looking this year.
I kind of know. So he doesn't walk many guys. He allows a lot of home runs. That's what he's dependent on. If the long ball's going for him, he's going to suck. If he keeps the ball in the park, he's going to be good. That's his issue this season.
Isn't that most people's issue? Like if you keep the ball if you keep the ball in the park, you're going to be fine?
His fly ball rate is pretty concerning, and he doesn't really strike out many guys. He's good at limiting walks. So our approach probably works good for pitchers like him.
Yeah, I'm looking at his peripherals right now, and it's doesn't look that good. The only thing that looks good is his walk percentage. That's it, like you're saying.
I'm gonna go on Baseball Savant right now and look at his.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
Oh yeah. We can crush this guy.
We should crush this guy. His ERA for the month. He didn't even pitch in. Okay, he did pitch in August. His ERA in August was a 5.03.
Yeah, he's been hurt a lot of the season. Wow. I think he fucked up his thumb or something like that. It's just it's really taken him out. But he had a very good season in the short 2020, but it seems like he's just not at full health right now.
He was a promising pitcher. We'll have to see what's going to happen. That game will be on Sunday, and we will be back right after the ending of that game. So Ed, do you have anything you'd like to add?
I'm just excited to have good baseball again. August is over. Hopefully people will be coming back from COVID soon. Stay safe, wear a mask. Yep.
And Isaac, you got anything?
Glad about this team. Be safe. Hopefully the COVID situation gets better and we keep playing around 500 until everyone's healthy. I hope for the best.
Yeah, definitely. I want to just mention that, I did want to say one last thing before we end the episode. There were talks about the possibility of bringing it up in the winter meetings about the players getting completely vaccinated. I'm not sure if that's going to be a thing. It is something that has to be brought up to the union. The union has to agree on it. They're the Players Association, whatever. Hopefully, we don't see any backlash from this if that ends up happening. I'm not one person to say, hey, you need to get vaccinated. I'm not one of those people that are like, you absolutely need to. I know there's people on this show that believe that. And whatnot. I do believe that it is a choice. And if you choose to do so, that's on you. Hopefully that you don't contract COVID. But you know, just be safe. Do your thing. And you know, let's get through this shit. Really. It's bullshit. So, sorry to end the episode on such a somber note there. Fuck. That was terrible. Can we do something else? Can we do something else to like end the episode? Like for real?
We could talk about how great Hogdale is.
I feel like your Hogdale love is almost as bad as Brady's love for Nick Pivetta.
Oh, but I actually know Hogdale at least.
You do? He lives in fucking Iowa. You
know, yeah, but I've met him on the internet. That counts. Surely that must count for something.
Ooh. The Athletics. They play 3 games against Toronto, and then they play 3 games against the White Sox.
Ooh.
Yeah, we've got a little tough series coming up after the Wednesday game. We go to Chicago.
It's a great thing. They play Seattle and Oakland. They play each other 6 times in the end of the year. That's really helpful.
If they split the games, that's the only help that we'll get from them. Chicago, we've got Cleveland, Tampa, Chicago, Seattle. That sucks. I'm not going to watch any of those fucking games, most likely. Then we got Boulder. I hate West Coast games. Can I just say how much I fucking hate those? Like, I live on the fucking East Coast, so they start at fucking, like, 10 o'clock at night. I'll probably watch, like, 5 innings of that game. It's fucking terrible. I do like the fact that the Wednesday Seattle game starts at 4:10, technically 1:10 their time. So
yeah, that's kind of nice.
And then they got to go home day on a Thursday. Dude, they have 3 Thursdays off in a row.
Oh, wow. Christopher Smith just tweeted another Chris Sale quote.
Uh-oh. Well, what did he say?
This is what Cora said about Sale. Chris Sale was talking to the guys today. He's been saying all along, nothing's going to stop us. He's been very loud in the clubhouse, just letting everybody know. It does not matter what's going on. We're going to keep pushing. We're going to be okay.
I fucking love him. I love him.
This was before.
I take back my fucking player of the series. Fuck it. It's Sale. Fuck Erod. Erod, get your shit together. You got to start fucking talking like Sale. Get up in front of everybody and give shit. You know, stop being like, well, I don't know, man. We need you to start fucking shitting and fucking telling people to get their shit together. And then we're going to push through this shit. He what?
He said this before the game, and we played such a clean baseball game. Like, he's a
– this is what I'm fucking talking about. This is what we want from Erod, too. Like, come on. Like, he came out, and he was like, you know, I pushed through – I believe it was the last game. He's like, was it the last game? It was one of the last couple games that he played or pitched. He was like, you know, Porcello, Sale, and who else was it? I know it was Porcello and Sale. He was like, yeah, they taught me that I need – oh, Eovaldi. He's like, Sale, Eovaldi, and Porcello all taught me that, you know, I need to just push through and just keep going out there because if I show that I'm not going out there – I'm just paraphrasing here too. But, like, he's saying, like, if he doesn't go out there, he's showing the team that he doesn't care. You know, so I really need some more of this from Erod. Like, I love Sale. I'll always love Sale. And I'll hate him when he becomes a Yankee, if he becomes a Yankee. And I'll fucking probably like shoot myself, which not really. But I fucking hate the fact of like I even brought that up. But I love Sale. We need more people like Sale, like people with like that same mentality. Like imagine if Garrett Richards had that mentality instead of being like, well, this is the first time I ever had to wear a coat. More like, fuck you, dude.
It's just that Sale, I mean, he's just an amazing pitcher. He's probably a first ballot Hall of Famer when we're just talking about all this. So people, like, they just look up to him. Like, holy shit, you're Chris Sale. You're, like, the nastiest pitcher in baseball. Please help me. So he's, like, a father to everybody.
Yeah,
what happened to this team?
when people say, you know what, in all honesty, I really think that, because as much as I love Xander, and Xander has been the longest tenured player on this team. Also, I do want to mention this. How fucking weird is it that the longest tenured member on the team that was on the field the past couple of games has been Devers?
Yeah.
It like, feels it, like he's been around forever.
Actually, no, I take that back. I think it's Vasquez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. But Raffy has been around for a while, even though he's only like 17. 24.
Since 17. I just saw jokes. That. You see the what? Jokes?
I see the jokes what on jokes? Twitter that Devers would be the veteran when Meyer, York, and Casas are on the team. I think it's funny to think about that. He's such a child.
He is. Dude, how about him fucking like going off on the fucking on fire today? That was absolutely fucking hilarious. I know we talked a little bit about it, but like, I'm not going to sit here and say he fell tipped it. I'm not going to say he didn't fell tip it. I mean, I looked at it. It didn't look like the ball fucking went in a different direction, but whatever. But, you know, Devers fucking, when he gets that fired up, he usually only gets that fired up when he's talking to himself. All right, guys, yeah. We're going to call it an episode. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We actually had a TikTok. It's going to repeat itself. We're going to repeat itself at the end of the show, telling you to follow us on Instagram and all that good shit. But just make sure to follow us on TikTok. We do have some content up there. We put clips of our newest episodes up there. And once in a while, I'll go in there and just bullshit. All right. Isaac, thank you for coming on. Ed, it was a pleasure having you on for the first time in what seems like forever. Everybody out there, take it easy. Go Sox.
Thank you for listening to the Pesky Report. Make sure to follow us on social media at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Pesky Report. No matter what platform you're listening to us on, please make sure to leave us a review and a comment and let us know how we're doing. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Thank you for listening to this Belly Up Sports Podcast Network product. Some said we go belly up, so we made it our name, and we're still here.
Hogdale, Ed really, really loves you. And hey, Nick Pivetta, if you're ever listening to our episode, do know that Ryan Brady, he really wants to take you out to dinner.